Harry is the CEO of JM Financial Group, and over the past 20 years, Harry's worked in London, Tokyo, Melbourne, managing client assets in the Japanese and Australian equity markets. He's been in Melbourne for 12 years and was acting managing director of Mercury Asset Management in Australia, now BlackRock, and head of Australian equities prior to taking on the role as chief investment officer of AXA Australia in November 1998. In 2001, Harry was appointed as CEO of JM Financial Group Limited, specialist Australian equities manager, managing discrete portfolios on behalf of small institutions, charities, and high net worth individuals. Please join me in welcoming Harry to the stand.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry that the chap from Rainmaker's not here, because I could answer his question very directly, which is, can you find things to invest in? Yes, you can. Investing in new technologies is what I've been asked to talk about this week. Before I start, though, there are a couple of there's a triple irony, actually, in the last 10 days. First of all, the timing of Professor Garnaut's actual handing over of the document to Kevin Rudd. His was postponed because the global markets froze on that morning, and he was handing him a document about how the global economy, environment, is going to warm. So that was the sort of irony that struck me on the day. Second irony there was that humans will only react if you hit them in the back pocket. They will not react if you ask them to do something out of social or moral conscience. You've got to actually say, if you don't do this, it's going to cost you an awful lot of money. So far, a lot of the chatter that's going on is all about moral conscience. So we've actually sort of got to get around this and say, if you don't actually do something, you are going to pay for a lot of money for it. For those of you who live in Melbourne, your charges for the delivery of your water have just gone up by 20% as of the 1st of July. No one really notices that because it's quite a small portion of your general expenditure, but they did go up by 20%. The triple irony, of course, is the ag sector was excluded until 2015. And the reason why it was excluded until then is because after 2015 it won't exist because, of course, we'll be in the biggest drought and it'll be completely wiped out. So it won't need to be included. It reminds me of when they put in the federal constitution here in Australia in 1901. I think they said the state pension begins at the age of 65, but, of course, the average person only lived to 59, so it just wasn't a problem. Okay, I also have an answer to Mr. Fay's question that he asked the panel before lunch, which is, what would be the single initiative? As an Englishman coming to this country, please recycle your water. Australia is the driest continent in the world. It does not recycle its water. We spend billions of dollars putting in desalination plants, which are amazingly energy hungry, chronic CO2 emitters, and deliver hypersalinated water, which will cause a destructive force along the coastline of Sydney that only in 20 years' time people go, oh, hang on, I shouldn't have done that. So why don't we just recycle water? It'll cost you about one-tenth to do it, and let's put the money that you save from that into actually investing in new technology. All right. So what I'm going to ask you to stop thinking about compliance and procedures and everything else and actually flip it over. Stop thinking about things that are about how do we reduce emissions to actually focusing on things where there are zero emissions. Okay. So the agenda is, does the new technology exist? Should you invest in it, or why should you do it? And what are the risks? So the answer is the new technologies, absolutely they do exist. Australia has a fantastic track record for inventing things, radars, black box, penicillin, the lawnmower, the Hills hoist, atomic spectroscopy, so on and so forth. All these things are used in everyday life. Does the technology exist today that can create a real impact? Absolutely it does. And can you invest in it in a plausible manner? Yes, you can. Viable technology against blue sky, yes. Okay, it is not just all pie-in-the-sky stuff. This is actually pretty basic stuff. And you made the comment, sir, about the North Sea. Yes, in 1979, I think it came on, roughly speaking, early 70s, everybody thought it couldn't be done. Today, the UK and Europe are seen as the leaders in environmental subsidies and getting behind the solar movement. Germany is the biggest in the world. Nothing to do with their environmental credentials. It's all to do with the fact that they are trying to secure an energy supply that is not Russian. Russia supplies 45% of Europe's gas needs, and so suddenly the big bear has got the whip hand. Okay, that is why Germany is the world's largest solar country, if you like, despite the fact it's permanently in the dark and it's raining. Okay? So the answer is there are viable technologies that exist today, and it is not blue sky. Can you invest within a prescribed risk parameter? Absolutely, you can. And I really want to take my hat off because I think someone is here from Sun Super. Megan Chan. Yes, there she is. Thank you very much. Sun Super invested $25 million the other day into Geodynamics alongside with Tata, who is an Indian conglomerate. Okay, so the chatter here about, oh, what are the risk metrics and whether you should do it and we don't know how to value it. Well, guess what? It's out there, people are doing it right now, and it's actually quite simple. But people want to wrap it up into this incredibly complicated stuff as opposed to actually just getting down to the nuts and bolts. So why should you invest in it? I've called it social and environmental alpha. Now, alpha in my industry is all about value add. So the whole industry gets itself hooked into this thing whereby you've got to produce something that on a risk-adjusted basis produces a return that's in excess of the all ordinaries. Or some, you know, fictitious benchmark that is created by a bunch of people in an ivory tower who wouldn't know an equity if it hit them on the back of the head. Okay? So what I mean by that is you have a consumer discretionary sector in the ASX which has News Corp in it as well as Pacifica, which is a brakes part manufacturer. Can you please put those two together in the same sector for me? I don't think so. Okay, so that's the irony. So the whole industry got itself excited in the dot-com era because it said, look at this, social and ethical investment is outperforming the main markets because they had Microsoft. Microsoft a year later plunged, everybody underperformed, and then it was in court for antitrust. In other words, it was bleeding everybody else. Who is supplying to it. So how good is that? So let's get off this bandwagon of investing in this sector to outperform. Invest in it because you want to actually save the future. You want to actually put some money into social and environmental alpha. So let's tilt this away from outperformance of an index that in itself is already flawed. Okay, this is about the positive approach to climate change and the environment and society. Now, I'm only going to focus today on the energy side of the equation. There's a huge other area which is into the sort of societal side, which is all about biotech, etc. But I'll just focus today on the energy side. And the great thing we know is if you don't do anything about it, it's very expensive. Now, what I find is quite ironic in the last 10 days is that we've known and everybody's been looking at this and thinking, oh, this could get a bit ugly. We are grotesquely over-leveraged. Now, when you overeat, whether you over-gear, whether you over-anything in society, there is always a cost. There is always a financial burden that will come to bear. The financial burden is probably going to be somewhere in the region of $2 to $3 trillion by the time all this lot washes up. A lot of money. Now, the inaction is expensive line here. I reckon you would say that the good reminder will be was when half the foreshore of Sydney sort of quietly gets wiped out one day in a super tide. There'll be a lot of people going, well, why didn't we do anything about that earlier? So the cost is going to be way over the $2 to $3 trillion in 20 or 30 times if we do nothing about it today. Now, I sound like the lunatic left waving wildly from the sidelines. The Nobel Peace Prizes today should be given to exactly those people who were chaining themselves to trees 20 or 30 years ago and were called the lunatic left. The second really simple thing that you can do in answer to Martin Fay's question is change the planning laws in cities. Every city that has to, building that goes up in a city has to have a car park. Get rid of the car park. Very simple. That means people will have to take the public transport or bike. Okay, so a positive approach to climate change, you can easily get at it. You've got the old-fashioned wind, everybody knows that. The French, I was reminded this afternoon, the French have, someone's come out recently, Valerie Giscard, I think, and said, what are all these windmills on my horizon? Okay, because, of course, the French have 80% of their power generated by nuclear, and they've been doing it for years. So they're standing right in the middle in their usual fashion and saying, well, alley-oop. Okay, so wind is around and it's very viable and it's been proven to be effective. The only thing that's gone wrong with wind is that everybody's taken the asset, geared it to the gills, and then said, oh, it's wind. It's nothing to do with wind, it's to do with the people that are actually operating the wind and the structure around it. Second layer, coal seam methane. This is a huge asset bubble that's just gone off in the last 6 months. The problem about coal seam methane is that it is actually as yet unproven. And also the calorific value of coal seam methane is about half of liquid natural gas. And it's very dirty. So there's a little bit of, you know, issues we've got to overcome. But the good news is it's been addressed, and I'm sure technology will come to get there to overcome it. My favourite, and Sun Super's favourite, is geothermal. Wave, no longer people like me waving like lunatics from the fringe. This is a fairly serious activity. And also silicon and uranium enrichment. So I'm not sitting there saying, oh, crush the coal industry, get rid of it and everything else. I'm just saying it's got to, the solution to all of this is part of, everybody's got to be part of it. And we have our very own Silex Systems here, based in none other than Sydney at Lucas Heights, looking at silicon and uranium enrichment, which, by the way, General Electric are very, very interested in. Why? Because they are the largest producers of nuclear power plants in the globe. Okay, so there are plenty of options you can get your heads into. It is no longer the lunatic left waving frantically. It is actually viable options. So let's just look at geothermal. When I first put this slide together about 6 months ago, it said 2020. All right, I've now moved it somewhere 5 to 25 to 20. So the chickens are flying left, right, and centre at the moment because suddenly, hang on, this is politically difficult. It's politically getting troublesome, and so we're wavering. Ugh. Come on, guys, let's get visionary. Let's get some politicians that have actually got some vision and are prepared to take on this situation, because I think you can. Penny Wong, I may stand corrected here, I have never heard her utter the word geothermal. All I've heard her talk about is carbon capture and sequestration, which is, in my view, simply, how can I delay the event inevitable and poison the future generation? We have no idea what is going to happen if you pump CO2 into non-porous rocks. Okay, point one. BHP and everybody I've spoken to says this is at least 15 years away before it has any sense of capability of actually being effective and actually meaningful in its reduction. So that's 10 to 15 years from now. Ugh, that's a long time. And by that stage, as we know, there's a compound interest effect. Okay, so 5 to 25, pick a number, but we are needing to reduce emissions. Apparently, we need 300,000 gigawatt hours of electricity to be produced by 2020. We need baseload capacity. Hopefully, we can get low to zero emissions. We have high front-end capital expenditure, possibly, but very low ongoing input costs. The thing about coal-powered stations is that they're very cheap to build, but they cost you a fortune. That's the big issue. Nuclear is very expensive to build, but very cheap ongoing, because the cost of the fuel is less than about 3%. Of the total construction and the life of the project. So yes, I'm afraid Geodynamics gets the big tick. They are the trailblazers here. And I find it really interesting that Sun Super has got involved, Tata have got involved, and Origin Energy have got involved. Now, Origin Energy is cited this morning as the pin-up kid. All right, and they are. Grant King is a very smart man. And they have done phenomenally well. But I find it really interesting how they have put their foot into this camp. Okay. Now, I have to declare my interest here. I am a very early and probably grossly over-large exposure to geodynamics in my personal portfolio. But if you're going to believe in this, and you've got to get behind it, and you've got to put your money where your mouth is. So, yes, if you trawl through the shareholder records of geodynamics, you will find my name somewhere stuck in there. Okay. So it is a very easy way to get into this sector. Oops, hang on. I've gone the wrong way here. There we go. So what are the risks? Typically, we're dealing with smaller companies. Although in the recent market environment, what are the risks? I would say investing in this sector is a hell of a lot less risky than investing in, say, Barclays Bank. Deutsche Bank has been analysed to show that it has liabilities which are equivalent to 80% of the GDP of Germany. And the reason why AIG was saved was because basically they worked out that AIG had insured all of Deutsche Bank's credit default swaps. So how safe is our good old-fashioned bank? I actually right now prefer to invest in Geodynamics. I know who they are. I know what the risks are. I know they've got the money to do it. And therefore, it's just a question of, you know, it's binary. I can understand this. If they drill a hole and they don't get steam coming up at the desired flow rate and desired temperature, then it doesn't work. Fine. I get that. So they are smaller companies. They are typically technology or intellectual property biased. They can be embedded within a larger company, which is good and bad news. There are lots of varied sectors, just even in the energy field, can take time to become what I call classically investment grade, but by the time they do become classically investment grade, it's usually all over. So look at geodynamics. We've got base load renewable energy at zero emissions. Now, I find it phenomenal that the government just does not get this. Okay, yes, it's tricky. Yes, it's technologically demanding. No one knows what happens to fluids 4.5 kilometres below the Earth's surface at 230 degrees C. Just as much as they had no idea when they floated a 30-storey building off into the North Sea, and they didn't know really how far they're going to have to drill, whether they're going to have to start drilling, you know, they can do the horizontal drilling and all that sort of caper. Okay, but someone actually got behind it. I'm amazed the government has not got behind it. We have the picture-perfect geological setup of any country in the globe. it is absolutely dead ringer to happen here if it's going to happen at all. People say it's too far away, 400 kilometres away from the national grid. 400K, that is nothing. The cost of putting in a power line to there is nix. And if you put in a DC high voltage line, which is about four times as efficient as an AC high voltage line, then this all starts to make sense. So Geodynamics is a bit of a favourite. GRD, they have got in your own backyard here in Sydney, Eastern Creek, they have got a waste recycling plant, which they've had a few troubles with, but they've now got it together, where they can take house producible waste and make it 98% of it into inert mulch, as well as extracting gases, etc., that they then put back into the grid. This is good stuff. They've got a project in Lancashire in the UK, which is £6 billion over 25 years. The bad news is it's involved in GRD, and they've got another side of the business, which is actually doing really well, but it's tiny, and it's the cash cow to fund this waste cycling business, and the market goes, oh, I don't know how to deal with that. Okay, hopefully they'll spin it out, and you can actually then get it as an individual item. White Energy is all about how do I take poor coal or brown coal and get it up the curve a bit to make it more efficient. So at least this is, again, focusing on something where we're going to need coal, but let's make it more efficient, less pollutant. Now, please, I see everybody taking notes here. This is not investment advice. Okay, so Daisol. All right, Tata have got involved in Geodynamics, and this is another company they got involved in. Why is it that we find that everybody else wants to look at these companies, but not our own very selves? Okay, Daisol is effectively putting nanotechnology together by putting nanoparticles into paint, covering it, putting it onto factory roofing, the good old colour bond, and that produces solar power. So actually, your factory roof becomes not only a harvester of water, but it also becomes a supplier of oil electricity. Now, these poor punters have been at this for 17, 18, 19, 21 years, okay? And they are sort of just climbing up the curve, all right? But at least they've stuck at it. They're technologically very rich in the sense of their capabilities, and they've now got a backer in Tata, and they go into production very, very shortly in terms of actually putting this nanotechnology onto factory roofs. And I think Tata produced some enormous number of steel roofing. This is out of Cardiff in the UK. Worley Parsons have just come out and advanced this advanced solar thermal project that they've got, which is fantastic because they've got some really smart engineers. Again, this is inside their organisation, and they're going around now showing how they can put a solar plant, funnily enough, very close to where Geodynamics is, producing solar electricity on a not quite base load, but getting there. Carnegie Marine, this is wave technology. This is remote area wave technology. The great thing about these guys is it's not horrible, ugly structures sitting in someone's harbour. They actually sit just below the surface, and it's effectively... Did anyone grow up with... I was given as a kid one of those punch bags on a pole with a spring on it. Did anyone have one of those? It's like a sort of basketball on a pole with a big spring at the bottom. So this thing just flaps with the waves, and every time it moves, it's like a pump. And it sucks water in and pushes it at high pressure to the coast, drives a turbine, bingo. So you can change it from either doing water through the classic way that they do it on ships. So how do ships always have a constant supply of fresh water? Or you can use it as an energy producer. Okay? Serious stuff. These are not Mickey Mouse operators. These guys have been doing it. They've got some support. The government has actually given them a bit. But again... The last one is Silex Systems, which I've already mentioned. This is about enriching silica and also uranium to make it more effective and make it spread a bit further and hopefully to reduce the cost of producing A, solar power, and B, nuclear power. The last thing is make sure the portfolio allocation is consistent with your risk profile. Okay, so this is not stick everything in this like I've done and watch it go up and down like a yo-yo. This is actually saying, well, if everybody took 1%, maybe 2%, maybe 3%, maybe 4% of their assets, okay, and committed it to this sector, the amount of money would be staggering. All right? Now, the good news is people like SunSuper, and I think you're all unique, as a superannuation fund to that degree, getting there, is actually taking the initiative. Industry Funds Management took Pacific Hydro private, if you remember, 3 or 4 years ago. So they see some value in it. So that's the... answer. What are the risks? You know, what are the risks? The risks are there. Of course they're there, but the risks are in any equity. And what we've seen is that the good old-fashioned cornerstones of our society, the banks, are just as risky as anything else. Don't see this as high risk versus a bank. Don't see this as high risk versus BHP, Woodside, or Rio's. Okay? Because, in fact, they have exactly the same type of risk. It's an equity. They go up and down. It's volatile stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening. I don't know whether we have time for questions or not.
Hi, good day. I'm Pablo from Perpetual.
Yeah.
As a POM, there seems to be a fair bit going on over there. We had Alan Jones out recently from Woking, who's now in the London Climate Change Authority. What's your thoughts on, I mean, you've talked about baseload power with geothermal, but on decentralisation of power and cogeneration and those types of technologies, is there anything out there that you can invest in?
Yes, there is. I mean, Carnegie Marine is all about decentralisation of power because, of course, that's small power localised to the local area, so you just sort of basically plant it in the local wave sets and it produces power for the local area. So, yes, there is. The UK have really taken the initiative here by sticking windmills on any hilltop they can find and then plugging it into the grid. Now, they've got the luxury of not having huge distances to cover. So, typically, it's connectivity to the grid that is the problem. So in answer to your question, I don't know of anybody who has actually got the technology that says I can sort of supercharge it from the remote point to the grid. I'd look at it and say, well, yes, you could buy people who are building infrastructure to get it to the grid. My focus is on actually the companies that are producing the stuff in the first place, hopefully at marginal emissions. So I don't know of anybody in Cerner from a pure investment play who has got the technology to take it from the point of production to the grid in any other way than just simply over transmission lines.
But they're whacking them on the side of buildings.
Yep.
In terms of these fuel cell, hydrogen, yep. Gas.
The person from my Japanese experience is Kyocera. Kyocera's entire head office in Japan is effectively just solar panels, and they're also into ceramics. So you're talking about fuel cells there. So they're very big in that field. Ceramic fuel cells is another one. It's listed here in this country. The reason why I haven't put that up there is that is right off the planet in sense of the risk there, because they are miles and miles and miles away from really sort of, you know, actually putting something together that I think is commercially viable at this point in time. But someone's going to crack it, and when they do, rather like when someone cracks how to store energy, then you want to find that battery manufacturer that can do it more efficiently than they are today. But there's First Solar, for example, in the US is a major. They've developed a technology, okay, slightly tricky because they've replaced the silica with cadmium telluride. I'll try and get around that one, which is a heavy metal, but they use tiny amounts of it, and they've got a contract to take the heavy metal away from you at the end of 25 years. So that it's dealt with properly, hopefully reused. But yeah, the POMs are pushing this one really hard. And surprise, surprise, where are people like Carnegie Marine, Ocean Links, and all that lot setting up shop? Just off the Welsh coast to do dummy sites and things like that.
Okay, we've got another one. Down here was... gentleman here.
Thanks. I think, for instance, an institutional investor, when they look at risk, they would look at their strategic asset allocation.
Yeah.
And they'd break it up by cross-correlation between asset classes. Does this add any meaningful diversification relative to other classes? And as you've pointed out, we are talking about equity investments, perhaps private equity investments as well.
Yep.
The argument then is between a thematic approach and a mainstreaming approach. So, for instance, is it not better risk control to rather say, look at green opportunities, look at specific technologies, specific companies, specific stocks, and weigh them up against a bank opportunity or any other opportunity and let the manager decide, taking in climate change considerations, moving to low carbon economy, but taking into account all the other valuation factors, which is the relative better stock bet, rather than dictating from a top-down approach that 2 or 3% should be invested in this area of equity investment.
Sure.
So for an institutional investor, it does appear to be a more risky way of allocating your total portfolio.
Yeah. I'll try and sort of digest that in a manner that your comments about cross-correlations and risk and everything else is just symptomatic of the industry. They're looking backwards all the time. Those analyses can only be historic. And that's part of the problem. It didn't exist. So the difference between risk and uncertainty is a risk you can technically price, ha-ha. In the last 10 days, everybody's discovered what a long-tail event is. And uncertainty has no history on which you can price. Okay, so 1921, a very famous John Franklin, a very famous economist out of Chicago, clearly stated that that was the difference between risk and uncertainty. People put this in the uncertain box, and therefore they can't technically price it. I think the answer is you've got to do it from both sides. You've got to have someone who's actually got to step up to the plate, a la Sun Super, and say, we're just going to commit to this. We're going to put 2 to 3% because our members want us to be doing something positive as opposed to sticking it through this risk profile because you can't actually get a result from it. Because there's no history to draw on. There's no history of carbon pricing. So how can you risk it? There is no history of carbon pricing in Australia. So technically, from a purist perspective, there is no capability to price it and to put any risk adjustment onto it. It doesn't exist.
So maybe I'm being misunderstood. What I'm saying is the managers at the stock level are looking ahead and looking forward sure. in terms of risk and yeah. rewards, but it's not taken at a strategic asset
yeah.
allocation
level. Look, the answer is there are very few people like me, okay, who are prepared to actually stand up and say, if I get killed relative to the index because I'm actually pushing something that I think we have got to get our heads around in the next 15 or 20 years, okay, then they just because the industry is set up to say, you are judged relative to an index. So we've got to get rid of that flaw, okay? And again, sorry, I'm sort of starting to stand on my soapbox here, Chuch, but you've got to get rid of the flaw. And the flaw is it's all relative to an index. Why do fund managers always have fully invested portfolios? Well, A, they're instructed to by the boards of trustees. Secondly, they're terrified of holding cash because guess what? If the market bolts on them by 5%, they look like idiots on a quarterly view. So you've got to have a 15 or 20 year vision on this one, and that's why at the moment I'm sort of advocating that you pull it out and put it into this little box that says this is my box in 20 years time. Now, if you talk to Rob Grant of Pacific Hydro, who's the CEO, and I see him regularly about sort of once a month, if you talk to him, IFM have got no expectations of any returns from them until 2015, and they bought it 3 or 4 years ago. So for the first 10 years, all they're expecting this thing to do is suck money. But in 2015 to 25, they expect this thing just to go whoosh like this. So that's the difficulty, is the system is quarterly, is measured daily, monthly, quarterly. We report quarterly to people and they go, how come Geodynamics has gone from $2.10 to 89 cents? And you go, well, because it's in that sector. It's just volatile. But don't panic. Because in 10 years' time, if they get it, they're going to be $200 equivalent. So you just, you know, that's the way I look at it, and that's why at the moment I'm advocating that you pull it inside a little bucket that is actually one that people can stop getting at just because it gets a bit edgy and a bit volatile. Because you can't pull out in the sense of suddenly decide, I want to be in today and go on tomorrow, but back next week. Excuse my cynicism about my own industry. I've been around in it probably too long. And I do know how the big boys work too.
Right, I think we've got time for one more. So there was a good flow of hands in the air a little while back. And this means I get to ask my question, which is what about biofuels? Have you got any
Yes, biofuels. There have been plenty of those that have come and gone and been destroyed in the process, natural fuels, MB emission biofuels and so on and so forth. Classic example. Here you have an energy supply which is dependent on an input which is completely out of their control and has the capability to knock them over. That's why I love geothermal. Because once you've got that hole in the ground and once you prove the technology will work, and I'm sure someone's going to crack it, then there's nothing that can interrupt it. Okay. With biofuels, unfortunately, what happened is that the price of the underlying input just skyrocketed, which meant that all models from an IRR perspective or the return project return perspective just got wiped out. And so they've gone to the wall. And that's what will happen. I mean, that's what will happen to coal-fired industry, because the price of the input will go through the roof. And eventually some of these projects will just simply be non-viable. I'd liken geodynamics, or sorry, geothermal. Forget geodynamics for a moment. Liken geothermal to Woodside and LNG. I'm sure 30 years ago people said, hang on a minute, taking gas, pushing it down to minus 267 or whatever it is, minus 264 or whatever, and then floating it on a boat, which could, by the way, if it docks in, if an LNG tanker put the position of that thing, that ferry out here or the cruise liner out here, it would flatten half of Sydney if it went off. And I spent 3 years in Tokyo, and let me tell you, those LNG tanks are just right next door to the CBD, okay? But 30 years ago, I'd probably be told you're nuts. But today, it just happens just like clockwork, as though it's just part of us going to work and going home every day. I better shut up now.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, Harry, that was seriously, that was very, very stimulating set of comments, and very good to be able to actually name the options for the guy who's gone there, Jenna, Alex. But very, very interesting, and I think you're a man after my own heart. The idea of really going for the future and investing in the future is something I can buy, and I'm sure a lot of the audience can too. So please join me in saying thank you to Harry for a great.
Thank you for listening.